You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the 007 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson, my co-host for this podcast, Brad the White Shadow Jones.
The name is Jones. Brad Jones.
That is not a mistake, ladies and gentlemen. The theme song you are listening to open up the 007 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show is the theme song from James Bond. 007, obviously GoldenEye, obviously James. The whole thing just goes together.
I love it. Love it. And this is my single favorite podcast that we're going to do already.
And we haven't even gotten
it's the 007 podcast. It's my birthday this week. It's a big week.
It is your birthday.
It's a big week. Yeah.
What day is your birthday?
Thursday, 22nd.
Wow.
I know.
How old will you be?
Old. 28.
You will be 28. That's unreal.
I know.
And I'm only 24.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So the 007 podcast, there will be James Bond talk.
There will.
Of course.
There will.
It has to happen.
Sprinkled throughout and then a solid discussion at the end here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because Brad and I, if you haven't figured out, are kind of geeks, really, when it comes to movies and books.
Well, pretty much anything, but
yeah,
specifically
television.
Those things, yeah.
But movies specifically, and specifically for us, the James Bond movie, the whole thing.
The whole series.
The whole series is unbelievable to both of us. We've had conversations about this leading into this podcast, so we have to do something with James Bond, and Brad Jones is donning a James Bond t-shirt, from the opening credits where he shoots into the barrel of the gun.
Yep.
There's so many things about James Bond we could get into, and so
we'll get there. We got a lot of sports talk.
We do, and we've cut out essentially, in my mind, here's how I think it'll happen: probably about 10 minutes towards the end of the podcast to go straight James Bond talk.
We're gonna
get into our favorite villains, possibly the mistress or the woman, the James Bond girl, and of course our favorite James Bond character, and obviously the favorite James Bond movie that we saw. So all of that we'll discuss towards the end, but before we can get to the end, you have to start at the beginning, and like always, we start out with some local topics, so let's hit that sounder.
Local.
So, we're going to start out Bison football, and kind of a big day for the media. Bison Media Day was earlier this week, so you're going to be able to hear from a couple of players on offense. We're going to talk specifically offense this week on the Pinto and White Shadow Show, because we talked defense last week. We're going to go into offense this week, and then hopefully round it out next week, the podcast before the kickoff against Kansas State and NDSU, with just kind of a collaboration of that game and what we expect NDSU to do.
Yeah, obviously a lot of Bison talk going to be coming up here. If you have any comments, questions, you want to tell Dan how much of a moron he is about Brock Jensen, you can email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
And we do the Twitter. Obviously,
yeah,
Brad and I are pretty active. I am at PintoKFGO.
And I'm at the Bison Guy.
So go ahead and tweet at us. We put this on Facebook. You can friend us on Facebook. We'd love to hear the comments. We'd love to hear the emails from you. And we'll take anything. So with all that being said, said that we're going to hear from a couple players. But first and foremost, I had an opportunity to go talk to offensive coordinator Brent Vegan. And much like last week when we talked to Chris Kleiman, we're going to talk to Brent Vegan, the offensive coordinator for North Dakota State, and get his thoughts kind of on the upcoming season and how his offense has done throughout fall camp. So here is offensive coordinator, Mr. Vegan.
Here with NDSU offensive coordinator, Brent Vegan. Coach, first question I have for you is health-wise status, anything going on with your offense? I know Ryan Smith had the hamstring issue, tendonitis, but outside of that, anything else?
You know what? There's always your camp bumps and bruises that we're kind of fighting through right now, but nothing long-term. No one that's going to be out as of now, that first game. And you know, we got to work through the bumps and bruises and get guys reps, but be smart about it at the same time.
Going in with your receiving core that you had last year, we talk about bumps and bruises. It seemed like, you know, Zach Fraud, Trevor Gebhardt, and Ryan Smith always kind of seemed to be a little dinged up. To address that issue, have you seen any of the young guys kind of step up their game as far as depth is concerned with this offense?
Well, the three guys that you mentioned, we're certainly counting on them. I know Nate Moody is a guy that is kind of breaks the mold. He's never missed a practice, and he's out there reliable, and he's come a long ways. You know, we certainly hope to count on Cooper Wallow as a senior this year, and younger guys that are stepping up. I know Kerry Woods has done some real good things. We're taking a look at D. Gray, and Tyler Rice is a true freshman that's certainly getting a look. look right now.
Any of those guys do you see playing significant snaps August 30th?
Well, you know what? We'll let the next couple weeks play out, but I think they're moving closer to at least have that ability. You know, we're talking about being 6-7 deep to get to a couple of those guys, but over the long haul, I'm sure we'll see them out there.
Center position, Joe Lung graduates. Who's in the lead right now at this point in fall camp to take over for that position?
Well, I know this. We want to play the five best guys up front. You know, so we're looking at a bunch of guys, and probably the most experienced guy right now at that spot is Josh Colville, but he's also very new to center. You know, Zach Johnson's making some real good strides at that left guard spot, and you know, Jesse Hines is removed, and it's really a battle between Josh, Jesse, and I know Adam Schuler's in there, so I don't know if I answered your question, but hey, you know, we're still working towards that, and the five best guys are going to play.
How about Hag? Where is he sitting at right now at the offensive line?
Joe Hag, you know what? The amount of growth that he's had is tremendous. Now, he's not the equivalent of Billy Turner on the other side, and that's tough to be. But Joe, you know what, I expect big things out of him. He has the capability of being an all-conference type performer this year, and that's kind of what we're expecting of him.
As your quarterback position, Brock Jensen's going to be a star, no question about it. But last year, he used Carson Wentz a little bit. Do you see yourself maybe using him a little bit more and trying to use his skill set in this offense?
Well, you hate to have a player as talented as him that's sitting on the bench all the time, but there's certainly a purpose that second quarterback fills, and we'll have to see as the season goes along how much we want to utilize him, and part of that just depends on Brock's health and all that, but right now we feel real good about where Carson's at the quarterback position, and we'll kind of take the rest as it comes.
Your running back situation is beautiful with John Crockett and Sam Ojeri. What are the benefits of having two running backs, and what are their differences in their running styles?
They're a little bit different. Sam's maybe more of a slasher, and John's more of a power guy. They both have good speed, and they're both about the same size, but their styles and the way they appear to a defense is probably a little bit different. The benefit of having them both and feeling comfortable with both is the wear and tear that occurs over the course of the season, and then our ability to put Derek Lang in there and really him be able to do anything well, and really offsets, you know, the need to have those guys on the field every down as well. And Darius Anderson's a kid right now that's coming along, and we've been really impressed with Chase Morlock to this point, so that's a deeper spot than we were last fall by sure.
You guys love to run that middle screen, and maybe not that play in particular, but as far as passing out of the backfield or catching out of the backfield, who is the better receiver of the two, Ojeri or Crockett?
You know what? Sam's made a lot of strides. I would have said this time last year it was probably John, but Sam's made a lot of strides to close that gap, and I know Derek's a very capable receiver, and Darius has got some really good receiving skills. So I think from a standpoint of us being kind of interchangeable in who we're going to throw that ball to, I think they all have a very good ability right now.
Final question for you. Your team is known for its defense, but you guys averaged something like 30 points last year on offense. Do you guys come into fall camp with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, as a little bit of a team competition, saying, hey, we play against the best defense all year round. Our offense is great.
Well, we certainly know that the teams that we're going to face on a weekly basis might not be as strong as our defense, and you got to take the ups and downs that occur in fall camp. But around here, I think it's certainly a team philosophy, and that team philosophy starts with playing good defense and playing the type of offense that keeps them out of bad positions and is very opportunistic when we get our chances in the red zone and not turn the ball over. That all fits together. So, you know, we're not measured necessarily by yards and points. We're measured by winning football games, and if we can play our part in that, that's all that really matters.
Coach Ving, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So a lot of coach talk throughout that
okay,
whole thing.
Hold up. Before we get into anything else, I just want to make sure I had this quote correct. Brock Jensen is going to be a star, no question about it.
Starter.
Starter.
Yes.
Okay.
I saw you look at me, and that's what I thought you were hearing.
That's what I heard. Okay.
It was starter.
All right. Just wanted to be clear on that.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to give him his props just yet. Starter. As we go through that, a lot of coach speak, like
I
said.
Gosh.
So
holy smokes.
You're going to have to – I think the best – example of coach speak is when I asked him about the starting line.
Yeah.
And then it became every single offensive lineman that was on his roster could have a shot.
The only one he didn't mention was Billy Turner.
Right, exactly.
Everybody else
already,
was on there.
You know he's going to be a starter at left tackle.
All right.
So where do you want to start specifically when we come to breaking down the offense? Because I know where I want to start, but I'll let you take the
ball. There were two
here.
Things that I took away from here. Wide receivers is number one.
Okay,
and,
yes.
And there was that yours
yes,
as
that was
well?
Yes, definitely, because we've got some sound there too for that, but go ahead.
Okay, my impression listening to that from wide receivers is they don't have a star in the bunch.
Nope.
They don't, and he doesn't even pretend to think that they do. Because when you've got six or seven guys that are going to be in the rotation, and Cooper Wallow Jr. is a guy that we're going to depend on as a senior. Yeesh. I mean, I like Cooper Wallow Jr. I mean, I think he's got some
Isn't he supposed to be the fastest guy on the wide receiving
core
or something like that, which is something I've heard.
I was going to say, speed
there.
Doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot if you can't run a route. But,
no.
But I hear him thinking we got a guys with a lot of promise and a lot of guys that are going to get snaps, but not somebody that we can depend on. That's what I hear with that.
Here's the one thing that you're going to find with this receiving core. And going back to a blog post I put up on my blog on 740thefan.com on Pintos Points, the receivers are the biggest question mark for this team. It was the Five Reasons blog, and I talked about five ways NDSU might not win a national championship. People took that as me saying, oh, yeah, he hates him, he hates NDSU. No, that wasn't how it was taken. It's supposed to be taken. It was just supposed to be a look from the outside as, well, there are ways that NDSU could stumble. Receivers, to me, is one of the bigger areas because the depth can be there, but the health is not. Already, Ryan Smith, who had off-season knee surgery, is saying that his knee is acting up during fall camp. He had Coach Bull earlier in fall practice talk about a little hamstring tendonitis.
Ryan Smith is captain questionable. I've said since we started the podcast. Questionable.
But that becomes a problem because we've noticed with Brock Jensen throughout his career, he finds a safety receiver. You look at Warren Holloway, that was his receiver. And now Ryan Veldman as well down in the red zone, but Ryan Smith is that way too. And it has a lot to do with Ryan Smith and Brock Jensen and Brock Jensen, Warren Holloway. They were all roommates at one point, Brock with all of them. And I think to a point, and I know you're shaking your head, but that works chemistry-wise. Both, you know, the off-the-field chemistry, if you go, you live with somebody every day, it becomes one of these things where you kind of know who they are based off of necessity. You know what they like.
The bigger thing is those guys knew how to run routes. And
well, what are you telling me, Vra and Gebhardt don't know how to run routes?
How many receptions does Gebhardt have? I think running routes and being able to run them crisply at a Division I level are two different things. That's the same thing going from one division to the next when you go, you know, how many rookie receivers make a huge impact in the NFL?
Gebhardt had 34 and 44 for Vra last year. They combined for 78 receptions. Okay. 44 is
so
only
they, so they
44,
combined for two a game. 44, you know, they had two or three a game.
44 is only, what is it?
Three a game.
44 is only five less than what Ryan Smith had last year. What I'm saying is that when Ryan Smith is not on the field, to get back to the point I was trying to make, is that when Ryan Smith is not on the field, I don't think Jensen feels completely comfortable with the other receivers he has.
I would agree
now,
with that.
Now, this year, will that change? Because the younger guys, and the one guy I'm going to bring up specifically, Kerry Woods, but the younger guys, there's a lot of talent. And NDSU, you've seen through the recruiting the last couple of years, they've made a point to go out and get wide receivers.
Yeah.
Demetrius Gray, Deshaun Warren. Go ahead.
How do you, you know, and you make a good point that you like to have those safety nets of guys that you're comfortable with. If you're throwing seven different guys and shuffling that in there, though, how is that supposed to happen? You knew Warren Holloway was going to be on the field every single play. Going back, you knew that T.R. McDonald, you knew that Cole Heckendorf, you knew those guys were going to be on the field every single play.
You do. Or you did, I should say.
Yeah, and health is exactly right. When you don't know who's going to be on the field, or if you got a bunch of guys who can't differentiate themselves talent-wise, or you know, or just knowing the offense and running the routes well, it's tough to get that.
I agree with you, and I think that's why this wide receiving core, they have to build depth because they don't know if they're going to get the three same guys night in, night out. Nate Moody, who was mentioned by Brent Vegan, has every practice he's suited up for NDSU. He's played every game. He played every game last year, yet his talent is not the talent of these other players. And so to say, well, Nate Moody is our most consistent player, that's not helping the wide receiver core at all. The one guy, if we want to look kind of towards the younger players, the redshirt freshman and true freshman, the one guy that I'm going to pick out here, Brad, and I have a couple sound bites to back me up, Kerry Woods, the Bemidji, Minnesota native. Here is Brock Jensen on Kerry Woods at Bison Media Day.
It'd be Kerry Woods, I think, for sure. You know, he's he's been coming along, especially throughout the spring and now into fall camp here, tremendously. And he's showing to be able to catch the ball in tough positions, being able to contort his body and make tough catches, back shoulder and just being able to adjust the ball and runs good routes. So I'd say Carey has been one of those younger guys that has been pretty impressive.
And I'll double down on that and go Ryan Smith.
Everyone's really competing hard and everything, but I got to say, Carey Woods is really starting to come along as a wide receiver. He's starting to focus on this little thing, starting to get it a little bit, and us and having the older guys there to help him out, it's really helping him and becoming a better player.
So Carey Woods, obviously mentioned by both Smith and Jensen, is somebody that you can look for. Now, does that mean Carey Woods is going to come out, grab 70 balls, go 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns? Absolutely not. In fact, I don't think anybody on this receiving core is going to be able to grab more than 45, 50.
Okay.
Because
so over for any single Bison receiver this year,
yes.
Do you think one person catches more than 55 passes?
No, I don't. Do you?
Gosh. Basically, you're gambling on either Carey Woods being a stud or Ryan Smith's health.
You don't think Vra or Gebhardt
I don't
can
think
do
Gebhardt
it?
Can, no. I think Vra could, but to me, those are the two guys. Because in this offense, 55 passes is quite a bit. I mean, again, they're going to run the ball a lot. If we want to put this on our wagers, I'd take that. I'll take the over. Why not?
Okay.
Okay.
So the number is?
The number is 55.
And I'm going under, absolutely.
Okay. I'll take the over. 55 is a tie.
At one NDSU receiver. One NDSU receiver.
Any single receiver.
Okay.
Yep.
That includes tight ends, fullbacks, and running
anybody,
backs.
Anybody has more than 55 catches.
You're taking the over.
I will take the over.
All right. Done.
All right.
We'll sink it in.
All right.
We'll put it up on our blog page, the Pinto and White Shadow blog, which you can check that out. And a new feature, all these interviews, the bits of interviews that you're hearing, we're putting them up on our blog page as well, in case you just want to hear the interview later and take from it what you will. Moving on away from the receivers, let's look at the offensive line a little bit. They have a little bit of a question mark there at center. Joe Lund was the starter last year. The guy I think that will start there is Jesse Hines, because he played a little bit of center, I want to say his sophomore year, because he's only a junior, if I get that right, and I should just check to make sure. But he was out all of last year. Jesse Hines did not play, and he is only a junior. He had a red shirt last year because of an injury, so he sat out all of last year, but he played a little bit of center. He, to me, makes the most sense to overtake at center. Brad, do you have any?
I'm not going to even pretend to try to provide any offensive line analysis. The offensive line, unless they get hit by several injuries, is going to be just fine. I'm not concerned.
Joe Hagg and Billy Turner will be your tackles. Josh Colville and Tyler Gimstead will be your guards. And the center is the biggest question there. The other thing, too, is that when you listen to Vegan's interview, he talked about eight different linemen, which we made fun of a little bit. But again, when you have the faith in eight different linemen, that's unbelievable.
And I know this is kind of a different argument than we're making with receivers, but I think if you can block and they can move people in and out, I think that's a little bit easier to do than it is with receivers when Jensen's trying to figure out who in the world is on either side of him. So
it's the same thing with defensive line.
I have no worries about the offensive line.
It's the same thing with defensive line. When you talk about the depth at defensive line and you need fresh bodies and you need people to rotate in, offensive line can get that way too. And NDSU's offensive line, if they have that depth, the biggest thing about NDSU last year, the time of possession and the third down conversions. And when you look at the second half and what NDSU did in both of those categories towards the end of the year, oh my goodness, they just started to wear teams down. I think the worst time of possession games they had was Wofford and Georgia Southern, and go figure, because neither of those teams passed. All they did was run. And so they're going to end up taking up more of the TOP, as I like to say. But in the end, NDSU, to me, the offensive line, like you said, is not going to be a question. They're going to have depth, and it's just going to be a fun unit to watch and grow together. So let's move on from there. We already kind of addressed Carey Woods. I got into that. Let's talk about the offense overall.
Yeah.
Last year, averaged 33 points a game, 2,000-yard rushers, balance of pass and play.
Okay, 2,000-yard rushers. Now, twice, each of the last 2 years, they've done that, obviously aided by playing 15 games. But That was a number that I had. Do you say over or under 1.5?
I think it's over.
You think they both go 1,000 again?
I think they do, because look at the stats from last year, Brad. Look at how many carries that these two had.
The workhorses,
215
yeah.
and 194. Who had more? Do you know?
I would bet O'Jury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he started yep. last games, but he was the starter, quote yep. unquote. When you look at, they do it, they have yards gain and then they have net yards gain. Guess how many their yards gain
were? They were
even.
We've discussed this.
So to me, these two guys going over 1,000 yards each, that's going to happen.
So you're taking the over.
I'm taking the over.
Because I will take the under all day.
Really?
On that. All day.
Why?
A couple reasons. It was game 14 or 15 that they did it.
Well, it would have had to have been.
I mean, so it was very late. So I'm more so just playing the odds of, you know.
But they're going to go 15 games this year.
I mean, I am
99% sure they're going to go 15 games this
99%.
Year.
I mean, I would, if you had me to wager for or against it, I'd probably wager. Well, I mean, it's hard to bet against them. But you're assuming no injuries. You're assuming.
I'm not assuming no injuries. They did fine with injuries last year. Yeah, there's a lot of things that could derail them. You're right. You're absolutely
so
right.
I'm playing
99%.
The odds. Okay.
Play those odds.
All right. I say that's another one on the board.
You want to put that one on the board?
I want to put that one up. I want to put that one up.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fine.
So over under 1.5 running NDSU running backs over 1,000 yards next year.
And you are?
I take the under.
And I take the over.
Boom.
So we'll lock it in and do it. You know, I think about that too when you look at the yards per carry with those two backs. Because you want to talk about, well, they only did it at 15 games, but John Crockett averaged
I'm not arguing against their talent. These boys
carry,
are awesome to watch.
Sam
O'Jury
was like five.
But they've done it 2 years. It's 2 years in a row, and you know, you only live twice.
Really? Did you just drop a James Bond?
Boom!
Bond. James Bond.
Wow. Yeah, every time you can find a way to drop some kind of James
yes.
Bond comment in there, I will find that sounder.
I like it.
And I will play it for you. You know, anything else with this team? Looking at them offensively, let's go from this question, because I put this on here. From strictly a fan standpoint, you and I are in the stands, we're sharing a couple beers, we're watching this team play, and are we excited about this offense? Brad, you and I, from a fan standpoint, do we look at this offense and go, boy, they're a lot of fun to watch. They're throwing the ball everywhere.
It depends on your definition of fun.
I would say that
I mean,
is
if
my
you're
definition
looking,
of
if
fun.
You're looking for Drew Brees and the Saints,
that's
no.
What, but I mean,
are they? There's going to be some big plays because Vegan has shown that he can be very creative.
You never know
when he's gonna pull out a trick play. And again, I think we're gonna see Carson Wentz on some end arounds and
yeah,
some
we
different
are.
Passes.
Yeah,
we're
we
gonna see that. And they've got, you know, certainly Ryan Smith on the end arounds, and you got two backs, and these backs, they run hard. I mean, it's not going to be your finesse style offense. It's going to be more Thunderball.
I agree with that. I agree with the fact that it's going to be Thunderball. Hang on.
Thank Bond. You.
James Bond.
I agree with that fact. However, from strictly a fan standpoint, that's how I'm looking at this. This offense is not entertaining. There are like how do I relate this into something? It's like watching, it's like watching House. You know how it's going to end. I mean, it's all going to just be running the ball.
It's Minnesota Vikings. They're going to run the ball and run the
but
ball.
But
even the Vikings are
more entertaining.
It's the Tim Tebow Broncos.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You just know how this whole thing is going to end. I mean, it's always going to be run on first, run on second. Oh, it's second and five. Maybe we'll pass. Run on first, run on second. Oh, it's third and three. Let's run on third.
I don't understand why your argument has to be, I don't want him to just win. I want him to win pretty. No, just win.
Well, that's their philosophy, but I'm saying from a fan standpoint.
What a dumb argument.
What do you mean it's a dumb argument? When you look at it from a fan standpoint, Brad, I don't care about the coach speaking. All we do is win games. That's fine, but from a fan standpoint.
From a fan standpoint, I want to see the Bison win games. Period. I don't care how
they
do it.
I want a little entertained.
I want a third trip to Texas.
I want to be entertained a little bit while I'm on my way there. I mean, yeah, I don't want to go down in the minivan without the DVD player. I'd like the DVD player in there. I would like to see a little entertainment.
So you're telling me last year was not an entertaining season from the Bison offense. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was kind of bland.
Okay. Okay, you're not going to get a lot of support on that.
But I mean, yeah, 33 points a game, that's great and everything, and I get that they were consistent. They were very consistent, but again, stretch out the field.
Just win, baby. I'm channeling my inner Al Davis. Just win, baby.
I would like to see him stretch out the field. Let's move on.
Regional.
Okay, so one of the topics I had in our regional section, Andrew Elbers, the Canadian-born twin starter, has had 17 straight innings pitched of scoreless ball. I don't know how he did in his last start. Did he start on Saturday, I want to say? I can't remember. Doesn't matter. Let's just base it off the first two starts because I'm assuming that his third start did not go the way that you would hope it would. Put that into perspective. Does he continue to do what he's done the first two starts as time goes on? Is this something that you're looking at and going, oh man, this guy has an opportunity to be a third, second, possibly first star? Are you going, luck?
Fluke. I won't say luck because I think this happens a number of times every year where a pitcher comes up that nobody's ever seen before, comes up, has a couple of good starts, and then hitters get a little bit of tape out of them and they start hitting them. I mean, it happens all across the major leagues. And I think this is just another one of those instances. I think in those first 17 innings, those first two starts, I think he had like five total strikeouts.
Yeah. But Greg Maddux wasn't a strikeout pitcher, and he still had
a lot of strikeouts. Maddux had more strikeouts than you think, even though he wasn't your overpowering strikeout pitcher.
Really?
Yeah. He really did.
How many strikeouts did he have? Take a wild guess.
I bet he had, I'll bet 2,600?
2,600? I haven't looked at the numbers yet. I'm going to guess 2,100.
Okay.
I'll have 500 less, which is a couple years.
Yeah.
Of pitching. Hang on, strikeouts.
Okay. We need some like looking up Greg Maddux's pitching music.
We are way off. He played 23 years. 23.
He's over $3,000, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah.
3,371, and in fact, he had 204 1 year in Atlanta.
I was gonna say, he was more of a strikeout pitcher than you thought.
Wow. Wait, you realize he led the league at hit batters at 26? The guy was known for control.
We're going deep into Greg Maddux stats.
Yeah, I know. We're looking at Andrew Elbers, who lost his last start on Saturday.
Either way, you got to strike more people out than that. I think it's lucky. I'm sure if you want to get into the advanced stats, his BABIP, very unsustainable. You know, I mean, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, there really isn't much to say. The guy doesn't even pitch from the full lineup. He goes straight stretch with it. Last start, I'll read out how he did. He went 7 innings, in fact, his last start, but he gave up 5 runs, all of them earned.
How many did he strike out?
Struck out 3, so career high in strikeouts.
That's not good.
One homer, gave up 8 hits. I'm just looking at these through 97 pitches. He wasn't good. It just wasn't a good start for him, considering what he came off of.
Yeah, you can't not strike people out.
No, you're right. You really are right. And the Twins, not only, I think Andrew Elbers is kind of almost this mini-cosm of what the Twins have been the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of pitchers who throw strikes, they get outs, but boy, they don't strike anybody out. They are not missing a lot of bats, and that's finally caught up with them, which is annoying as heck to me because I see teams like the Mets with a guy like Phil Harvey. Matt Harvey. Who's Phil Harvey?
I don't know.
Boy, I am on my game tonight. Matt Harvey. Striking out a ton of dudes. Felix Hernandez with the Seattle Mariners. They're top-end pitchers on bad teams. But I would like a top-end pitcher because the Twins offensively at some point are going to get there.
A lot of people would like a top-end pitching, and it seems like there's being more of those guys. There was kind of a drought of top-end pitchers a few years ago, and now it seems like there's a lot of guys out there.
And the Twins are missing the boat. They really are. Do you think the Twins, this is completely off-topic, do you think the Twins will have to make a trade like the Royals did at some point?
To go get,
because they traded Will Myers for James Shields, and I think they gave up somebody else. But essentially, that was the trade. The Royals were saying James Shields will get him for 2 years.
Man,
we'll go out and sign Irvin Santana, and James Shields is our guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's working okay for the Royals this year, but you know, so what kind of pitcher would the Twins have to get to give up Byron Buxton?
Would it be Buxton or would you say Sano? Because it would be one of those two guys.
Well, okay,
either way. Who would they go get?
Who could they realistically get with that? Because James Shields is good.
Well, take a little bit more
James
research.
Shields is a B-plus pitcher.
But even so, he has done a great job for the Royals. And he's kind of one of those guys you look at every fifth start and go, yeah, we probably can win with him. Where
but
the Twins
you,
don't have that.
But would you? What would you think if the Twins traded Buxton for James Shields? My guess is you would be upset.
Yeah, I'd be a little bit annoyed.
Yeah, you would be upset.
But in the end, with the way the depth, it's a long, drawn-out question because you'd have to look at what team would be offering a pitcher
and
that you could get for a couple years.
It's do you think you're a pitcher away? And here's the deal. The Royals,
yeah, that's true.
The Royals are impatient. And they have every right to be because they've been terrible for
a long time.
The Twins have been bad for, what, 2 or 3 years now?
Three. This will be their third straight year.
I mean, so I think fans will be a little less impatient with the Twins.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think there's that desperation that's there quite yet.
Well, I feel like it's going to get there essentially. By the way, Phil Harvey.
Matt, okay.
Oh. I just had to check this out. Former manager turned corrective director. He's just a nobody, but he's somebody, but he's a nobody.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know what's going on here. He's an entrepreneur. He's got. There's
I need
two,
to, I need
there's
to take
two,
the computer away from you. You're sending us down to rabbit holes that even
there's,
the
there's two
Cheshire
Phil,
rabbit
there's
can't get out of.
There's two Phil Harveys on Wikipedia. Phil, to me, seemed like a name that made sense. So,
you know,
yeah,
that,
you're right.
You know what? This Phil Harvey stuff should just stay for your eyes only. It really should.
Oh, my goodness. Hang on. Let me find it. Let's make sure here.
Bond. James Bond.
Boy, that's like your third one so far. So, yeah, you're right. If the Twins believe they're a pitcher away and if they were that desperate to get rid of Snow or Byron Buxton, yeah. But even that, I mean, the trade of Will Myers for James Shields was looked at by baseball insiders as, what are you doing? You know? And so the Twins to do something like that, they would have to be, like you said, feeling they're one pitcher away. We have to address the Nikola Pekovic signing.
Yep.
Timberwolves. 5-year, $60 million deal to re-sign a restricted free agent. Thoughts on the signing?
I don't think you're winning a title or even really competing for a title playing Pekovic $12 million a year. I think if that's the money you're paying him, you're essentially paying him to be the third best player on the team. And if he's the third best player in today's NBA, you're just not going anywhere.
How do you like that?
Boy, that's some strong words.
He's a player. You could get 70% of Peck's production from people off of the people for the veterans minimum. I really believe that. You could get guys who could come in and score, you know, 12 points and grab 7 boards.
But Peck is better than that.
He's 17-8. Like I said, you're not going to get the full, but would I rather pay 10% of that but be able to get 70% of that production? We've discussed this before. It's what's your goal? If your goal is to put an entertaining team on the floor and be a playoff team, they're probably that. But if your goal is to put a championship contender together that's going to be something that 2 years from now that Kevin Love is going to stay around with, you don't pay Pekovic $12 million a year. You just don't.
But with this team, the way it's comprised, to me, how can you not win with Peck, because they have a balanced team?
Because we've discussed this, and you've been on both sides of the argument. It drives me nuts how you say that this is a good enough team for Kevin Love to stay with, but yet they're at best the number 5 team in the West.
Oh, okay, you're right, but right now they're the best number 5. They're the right now. Why can't they grow, which I think they will eventually, into third?
It's hard,
or second even.
Yeah, I don't see that though. I just don't. I mean,
because the guy's only been playing 3 years in the NBA.
Kevin Love.
So he'll develop into something better. I think he could be a 2010 guy.
But he's already 27, 28. Pekovic is older than Dwight Howard.
He's 27. You're right.
I mean, he's just, I don't see Peck becoming much more than a 17-8 guy. Or maybe he grabs another rebound or two a game. But Kevin Love is, it's hard to imagine Kevin Love's prime being better than what he is now. It's hard to imagine Kevin Love becoming a 25-15 guy. Because those guys just, you know, when's the last time there's been a 25-15 guy?
I think if Peck does go 20-10, which I think he could get to eventually.
Yeah.
I really do.
Okay.
And then you have all these parts that you've put together.
But
it's
a lot of parts. And one thing that you can't do in the NBA is overpay role players. Kevin Martin's a role player, and they're paying him a lot of money. Chase Bunn, and these are guys that I like, But you get guys that you like Mike Miller, can do a lot of what Kevin Martin can do for half the money.
But here's the thing about the Timberwolves that you have to remember is Kevin Love and Ricky Rubio are going to be the two guys that get a lot of minutes. Mike Miller is a role player on the Heat because they only expect him to play 15 minutes a game. He can't go to the Timberwolves and only play 15 minutes because then they're expecting 20, 25 minutes
okay,
out of these
that's
guys
fine, but
around.
Is the production that he's going to give you for a million or two going to be that different from what Kevin Martin's going to give you for whatever they're paying him, 6, 7, 8? Is it that different? I mean, it really isn't.
Let's see. How do I address that question? Because to me, it's over an extended period of time where I see your point, and I agree with it. In a way where, well, you get a Mike Miller and then you get somebody else to fill in the time that Mike doesn't play. I believe is kind of what you're going at.
What I'm saying is in the NBA, you can't overpay role players because the way the league is right now is it's a group of superstars is what's winning titles right now. That's just what it is. You need role players, but you can't overpay role players. You got to pay the superstars and find role players for cheap. That's how the Heat have won two straight titles. That's how the San Antonio, they've paid Parker, they've paid Ginobili, they've paid Duncan, and everyone else they've gotten by drafting or for really cheap.
But let me ask you this. Because I get the whole superstar talk, and we're talking NBA and they're not even in season.
Yep.
Not be that as it may. When you're looking at NBA teams, LeBron James is special.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant is special. I mean, these are upper echelon. Tim Duncan was special, but when they had Ginobili and when they had Parker winning those titles, were those two, in your mind, at that time, in their prime? Were they playing their best? Because I don't think Parker was.
Parker was for their last one, but Duncan is incredibly underrated historically. Duncan was in that level. There is a legitimate argument to be made about who was the best player of the 2000s decade. Is it Kobe Bryant or Tim Duncan? There is a legitimate argument to be made there.
Okay, which is a question we probably can get into later. But what I'm saying here is that when you look at the Spurs, that team to me was put together in a way where it was Duncan and everybody else around him. But Parker was really good, and Ginobili was really good.
Okay,
but they weren't overpaying.
Parker was better than a role player.
But there again, you have to remember that you have to think about the franchise they came from and the fact that these are they're different players. You have to look in the fact that the Timberwolves are going after just trying to make noise in the Western Conference. They've never as a franchise done anything besides make what, the conference semifinals?
They made the conference finals in 04.
Yeah. Outside of that, they've only made the playoffs like four times in their franchise history.
Oh, that's wrong. They lost in the first round of the playoffs for like six or seven straight years with Duncan.
It's not that many times considering how long the history is of the Timberwolves, because it's like 20-year, 25-year history. They've only been in it a handful of times. So when you're talking about, well, they don't have to pay these players that much, you're talking about a good team not having to pay players that much.
Let's hold on here. So, and this maybe gets back to the overall goal, is what is the goal of your franchise? If the goal of your franchise is, you know what, we've had a not great product for several years since the KG trade. We want to put together something that's going to be fun and that our fans are going to enjoy watching and that we're going to be a decent team. Okay, I get this, I get the signings, I get what they're doing with the roster, and I fully endorse it. If you're trying to create a title team, this isn't going to do it. It just isn't.
Not right now. Maybe down the road
in a couple of years.
Well,
because
how long
if
is
it
love
isn't
for?
Right now.
How
I think long? He's got enough, I think two more years.
You can check on that contract.
I think he's got an out option or it might even be after this next year. It's one or two years that he's got left. And you know what? If Kyrie Irving develops into the point guard that we think he's going to, and Cleveland can pay him and he can go play with Kyrie Irving, you know what? He's probably going to do it. And that's just it. And then you're starting all over again. You hit the lottery once with Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't find that at least that second superstar to put with him, and I don't think Rubio's that guy. I just don't. You think Rubio is going to be better than I do?
I really do.
I think you need something. You need a scorer, and he's just not a scorer, and he's not going to be a scorer.
Was Jason Kidd really a scorer though?
But Jason Kidd was never a scorer. I mean, he never had to be. He could shoot.
That's the thing they're doing with Rubio is they're surrounding him with guys that so he doesn't have to be a guy who scores 12-15 points a game. He's a facilitator.
But your second best player has to.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does.
No, he doesn't have to, because if you look at the argument of a point guard that facilitates being your second or even your best player, the team generally can win more games because he sets up players in order, in ways that they can succeed on the court.
And NBA defense is as sophisticated as they've gotten now, though. I mean, we saw this. That's how the Lakers beat the Celtics in the finals, I think it was in 08, is Kobe Bryant didn't guard Rondo. He just played off, and they basically played 4-on-5. And that was the reason that they lost the finals that year, because they just didn't have to guard him. And NBA defenses and NBA coaches are so smart nowadays that if you let them do that, they will eat you alive. You will win some games, but you will not make any noise in the playoffs, because those matchups and the things like that will kill you. And I'm sorry, there's no Paul Pierce, there's nobody like that on the roster for the Wolves.
We have to move on, because we just spent a lot of time talking Timberwolves. All right, I had a question I thought of just out of the blue. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but it's kind of a fun question. If you could pick to see one Minnesota team in their prime, which one would it be and what year? And I threw out some options for you, so I'll throw out these options. The Timberwolves in 2001 or 02, 02 or 03, or 03 through 04. The Minnesota.
And 03, 04 is really the only option with that one, just saying.
The Minnesota Twins. By the way, Timberwolves made the playoffs 8 times in their franchise history, so we're whatever. Twins in 1965, 1991. Or 2010, the Minnesota Vikings in 2009, 1998, or 1969, and the Minnesota Wild in 2002 through 03, 06 through 07, or 07 through 08. So here's what I'm going to do, because I'm going to take the Timberwolves and the Wild and just throw them out, because neither of us are going to choose either of those guys.
Yep.
And so we're going to go to the Vikings or the Twins. Brad, who would you go see? What team would you go see in their prime?
It's funny, because There's two teams that come to mind. The nostalgia of the 91 Twins for me. I mean, my parents went to one of the World Series games. I can remember watching them on TV and creating a little diamond in my aunt's living room and recreating what I was seeing on TV.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. So very nostalgic. From a results standpoint, it's hard to argue against the 91 Twins. The only other thing, and this kind of gets into your argument of just fun to watch.
Yes.
Man, that 98 Vikings team was fun. I mean, 3,000-yard receivers, Jake Reed, Chris Carter, and Randy Moss. Robert Smith, I believe, was the running back on that team. And then you throw in, or was Terry Allen the running back? Is it Robert Smith or Terry Allen? And then
98 team?
Yeah.
I think it was Robert Smith.
Yeah.
I believe
and
so.
Then, and Randall Cunningham coming out of, you know,
nowhere,
the mothballs,
essentially. Yeah.
And having, I mean, that team was insanely fun to watch.
Who would you go then? Pick.
I gotta say the 91 Twins.
Okay.
You can't argue against a champion. I mean, if I'm gonna watch one season, I want to see a championship.
And you had put the comment in here when I put this out as far as topics were concerned. You said instead 2010 Twins, put the 1987 Twins. 1987 Twins were bad. They weren't good.
Except they won the World Series.
Well,
Other than that, they were bad.
They went 85. I shouldn't say bad. They weren't they weren't a good regular season team. They were like 85 and 77, which is it's not good. But because of the way it was formed in 87, there were two divisions, and I think they were in the Western Division at the time.
Yeah.
85 and 77 was good enough to win this Western Division, much like it would be when the Central Division nowadays. For me, the 1965 Twins, because I'm a baseball nut, and I just love baseball history, and I look at how good this team was. Harmon Killebrew, Tony Oliva, you had Jim Cott on there as well. Mudcat Grant was on that squad. This team should have won the World Series, won 102 games in the regular season. We're up 2-0 on the Dodgers in 1965, and in fact beat both Don Drysdale and Sandy Koufax in back-to-back games. And then all of a sudden, Sandy Koufax went just absolutely bonkers. I looked at his stats. His ERA for the World Series was like 0.85, pitched 18, 19 innings, went 2-1, including winning Game 7. Here was Game 7 for Sandy Koufax. I believe it was a complete game. I'd have to go to the box score. I think it was a complete game, three-hit shutout against the Minnesota Twins. Sandy Koufax in his prime was absolutely amazing.
Yep.
It was a complete game.
Yeah.
three-hit shutout. So you're saying, but I'm saying 6-5 yeah. Twins. Okay. Absolutely. No questions about it. Would have been so entertaining to watch.
You say they would have hit the living daylights out of the ball.
Oh, my goodness. Do we have to? Okay. One more time.
Bond. James Bond.
Okay, let's get into it because we're going to run up short on time so we can talk.
National.
Let's get into the national topics. We have to talk Bond. Look at some of these national topics we can throw out. The one about the major sports league, because we'll get to that later.
Gosh,
I know.
Just so mean.
I know.
Just mean.
But it's a fun question we'll have to do.
It's mean.
Let's go through this quick, because here's what I like to do, because we can put this on our wagers page, on our Pinto and White Shadow Show blog page on KFGO.com. Let's go through the AFC West, what am I talking about? The AFC, when it comes to football, doesn't have to be West, but we'll get there. Let's go through the AFC, look at the teams, and who we think is going to win the division. Let's see what I put exactly for this. I want you to tell me the winners of each division and who you think will ultimately win the conference, and I got very excited after the end of that comment. So let's just go through this here quickly, Brad, because I don't want to get really into breaking down a quarterbacks and the schemes or everything. You look at the East, you look at the North, South, and, of course, the AFC West. In your mind, Brad, and we have it on audio, so this will be recorded and this will be part of our wager, whatever. Who do you think will start in the AFC East? Who do you have for the AFC East?
New England.
Okay.
I mean, Miami might be a little better. Buffalo, maybe. New coach, we'll see. The Jets are a train wreck. New England.
And almost by default, because I don't know how good New England's going to be.
They have Tom Brady.
That's really all that you need to know. I will go ahead and go with the New England Patriots as well. Keep it boring. The AFC North, however, is entertaining to me because, in my mind, three teams that could possibly win this division. You got to pick one, Brad. Who do you think?
I think I'm still going to go Pittsburgh.
Okay.
I don't know. I have very little confidence in that. But, they just win. I mean, they just do. They're always up there. So, when in doubt, I'm picking the Steelers.
I'm going to go ahead and pick the Cincinnati Bengals.
You would.
I'm a big Bengals guy.
I love A.J. Green.
I love Andy Dalton. And
he is a ginger.
Those two, yeah. Those two, to me, offensively do well. The defense is kind of suspect because there really isn't any big-name players on the defense, and they play in a very defensive-heavy division when you have the Baltimore Ravens, who were not even Super Bowl winners. We're not even picking to win the division.
They were my other pick. I would have picked. It was either Pittsburgh or Baltimore for me.
But
until one of those other two teams knocks them off, then I'm just going to keep doubling down with them and feel okay with it.
And so, to me, I like the Cincinnati Bengals, and we'll see how that goes. The way Cincinnati loses this division is if they lose division games, essentially, which is very possible because I think they did pretty well last year because they made the playoffs. I know that much. I don't think Pittsburgh did, but Pittsburgh was ravaged with injuries. Ravished. I don't know. Bengals
ravaged, but you were close.
Bengals went 10-6 last year and were a wild card team.
Yep.
And so Pittsburgh missed out and the Ravens won the division, but I have the Bengals. Okay. So we'll move on from there. We'll go to the AFC South.
In
Texans,
kind of,
Colts,
the who
Jaguars,
cares division,
and Titans.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll, again, not a lot of confidence, but I'm going to go Houston.
I'm going to go Houston, too.
Yeah.
Easy pick. Matt Schaub, your local businessman, your local banker.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then Adrian Foster.
Arian Foster. My gosh.
It looks like it should be Adrian.
Come on now.
I know. It's pretty bad.
That's pretty bad, even for you. AFC West is the easiest one of
Hello?
Them all.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So, AFC Houston West, Texans, easy for us to say.
And
that.
AFC West is Denver.
You sure about that?
Yes.
I mean,
unless Peyton Manning gets hurt. The Chiefs, give me a break.
What about the Raiders?
Yeah, uh-huh.
What about the Chargers?
You can't even say any of those with a straight face.
What about the Chargers, man?
I can't see it via podcast, but you could not say any of those with a straight face.
What about the San Diego Chargers and Philip?
No.
Most overrated quarterback in the NFL. Who is it in your mind?
Most overrated? Oh, my gosh. That's a big question. I mean, everybody says it's Tony Romo. I mean, that's the answer that most people give. Apparently, you think it's Rivers.
Oh, my goodness.
But I disagree with that because people think Rivers is a terrible quarterback. I mean, he had one or two good years and he's been bad. So, I mean, I don't think he's overrated because I think people realize that he's terrible.
Have they been picked to win the Super Bowl again by pundits? Because it seems to me it was like a 3-4 year stretch. The Chargers are going to the Super Bowl. Expect Chargers in Tampa Bay. Expect Chargers in Dallas. Expect the Chargers.
No, I agree. And a lot of it was because the AFC West, the rest of the AFC West was so bad, which was why people kept choosing San Diego.
For the Super Bowl, though? That was the one thing I kept hearing. Ryan Matthews, Philip Rivers, Antonio Gates, Vincent Jackson, they all stink.
Antonio Gates was awesome.
Minus Gates. Okay. And Jackson was good too. And Ryan Matthews is bad. Phillip Rivers is awful. Yeah. Most overrated quarterback.
I disagree with that because you have to be a lot of people think you're good to be overrated. Like just looking at the numbers, I would probably say Cam Newton would be my most overrated.
Do you have a fantasy league this year?
Of course.
Why am I not part of this?
Easy, because I didn't want to hurt your feelings.
Wow. I'm a little sad right now that I wasn't invited to be a part of this.
It's kind of how it goes. I basically just told you, Doctor, no.
Oh my god! So
that one was a little forced.
That was a little forced.
The other ones were better.
James Bond.
Well, okay. Enough of making Daniel feel left out and on the sidelines when it comes to fantasy football.
If it makes you feel better, I am the commissioner of the league and would have had the power to invite you and still didn't.
That doesn't make me feel any better.
it makes me feel worse. Oh, okay.
Wow. All right. Well, with that being said, we'll get into it here. Looking at James Bond. 007 podcast.
We didn't pick our winner of the conference, though.
Yeah, we got
each division.
Oh, yeah, the winner of the conference. We'll rewind here before we get to Bond. Winner of the conference. Yeah, who do you think it's going to be?
I'm picking Denver.
You want Denver in the Super Bowl? You like Denver in the Super Bowl?
I feel the most confident out of any of these teams that Denver's going to win their division.
Yeah.
I think this is a complete toss-up. And anyone says they have they really believe or they are certain that this team's going to make it, I think is lying to you. But I think the most likely team is probably Denver.
Yeah.
I mean,
there really isn't any.
That's just it. There's just nobody else that you're really going to choose over.
Just for the sake of argument, I'm going to go ahead and pick Houston.
Hey, Houston, okay.
With their Adrian or Arian Foster. They might have both backs. I don't know. And Matt Schaub. Yeah, I'll go Houston. Okay. J.J. Watt's one of my favorite players to watch. Guy's a freak.
Yeah.
Oh, and Joe Mays.
Go Bison. True.
So, yeah, I'll go Houston Texans. Okay. So, okay, now can we move on to Bond?
Yes, my gosh.
I'm sorry, I jumped the gun a little bit, and I wanted to, get to some Bond talk.
Yes.
I'm all about Bond. So, here is what we're going to talk about because of James Bond. In honor of this being the 007 podcast, Brad and I are huge James Bond nuts. We love the thing. We geek out at James Bond.
Yep.
No questions asked. So, here are some of the questions that I put on the table for us to talk about. Favorite Bond actor, top three favorite Bond movies, and favorite Bond girl or villain. You could go and or.
I think we get into both.
We could get into both. We have about 8 minutes,
okay,
7 minutes to do this. So, and we can go overtime as well. So what do you want to start with out of those four things that I threw at you? What do you want to go with? Do you want to go actor?
Let's start actor. And this has been the one that I've gone back and forth with the most. There's two that are bad that you can throw out. You can throw George Lazenby, you can throw Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
I mean, those two are rank at the bottom.
Okay, so you take Lazenby and you throw him out because he only was in one film. That's
And I didn't really care for the film either. That was probably my least favorite.
Yeah, and the only reason I think he was out of it was because Sean Connery decided to... Was he doing
something else, because that was after, that was the third or fourth movie, I think, on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Or no, I take that back. It was the sixth movie. So Connery had done five, and then Lazenby did one, and Connery came back for one more.
Right, he came back for one more.
He came for Diamonds Are Forever.
Okay.
But really, and there's a whole big thing, I mean, how these people got the roles. Sean Connery was never supposed to be James Bond. It was originally supposed to go to Roger Moore. But Moore was tied up in a sitcom, I believe,
at the time.
Yes,
I remember all of this.
He didn't. Timothy Dalton was never supposed to be Bond. It was supposed to go to Pierce Brosnan at that time, but Brosnan, I believe, was Remington Steele that he was in.
I think so. I think you're right as well.
And so, I mean, it would have changed how much it would have changed Bond. Now, my dad's favorite Bond was Roger Moore. Hands down, my dad loved Roger Moore, hated Sean Connery. So I grew up, whenever my dad wouldn't even watch the Connery movies, I grew up on the Roger Moore movies.
Okay.
And as I got older and watched the Connery Bonds, man, my dad's wrong. he was so good. And as much as I love Roger Moore, the Roger Moore action scenes were painful to watch.
Yeah, they weren't that great. Sean Connery's much smoother.
Yeah. I wish Pierce Brosnan would have had better movies, because I thought two out of the four movies that he had, the premises of them were terrible.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with 90% of everybody else. I got to go Connery.
Okay, you're going to go Connery as your top.
Yeah.
For me, you know, looking back on the Bonds, and I was one of those guys, my dad let me watch action movies growing up. I grew up in a very conservative household. Sure. So if it was PG-13 and included some kind of sex or drug reference, I was couldn't
Gone.
Watch it. Yep. Out of the room.
Okay.
But Bond was one of these things that my dad wanted me to watch. He's like, oh, the cars, the action scenes, everything is great. And really for me, I grew up watching Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I did.
Pierce Brosnan, to me, has the look of James Bond. When I think of what James Bond should look like, I think Pierce Brosnan.
And so when I think of the films, Tomorrow Never Dies and The World Is Not Enough and Die Another Day, they're not amazing movies. They're not. But that, to me, when I think of James Bond, I don't think Connery and Moore, who, to me, had the better stories. I love the old Bonds so much better than the newer Bonds. But to me, it is
Pierce Brosnan for me. I think he's chronically underrated. And like I said, I thought his best script, the best movie he was in, was GoldenEye, but he didn't quite have the James Bond persona down yet. He did in the other movies, and I just didn't have the scripts to go along with the talents.
What's next up here for us? We going
favorite movies.
Favorite movie.
Top three.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of agreement here on us with.
I believe there is
a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, widely the number one for almost every list that you see is Goldfinger.
Yep.
And it's tough to leave that off the top three.
It was only the third movie in of the series, which is sometimes kind of happens with a lot of these series, especially if they get kind of they go out there. I think you think of like the third one was really good. I'm not talking like. What am I saying here? Rocky, or I'm not talking stuff like that. But when you have things that go on forever, TV series is probably the best way to look at it. You look at like third, fourth, or fifth
seasons.
Yep,
that's usually when they hit their stride.
Yep. Kind of the same thing here. To me, Goldfinger, absolutely. The villain was absolutely perfect.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
The plot was absolutely great. I think it was probably Connery's best, one of his best acting. The whole thing just worked together for me. It was great. And the villain, Oddjob.
Oddjob was great.
Yes. Yeah. So the whole thing was absolutely perfect to me. So both us, we have that in our top three. Go ahead with your next one.
We're going to agree again. And I watched it today before the show, Skyfall.
And we could have a whole podcast on why Skyfall is one of the greatest
especially
Bond
for
movies.
Those who are the traditionalists, the ones who like the old Bond movies, they just bring the three Daniel Craig movies just so full circle back around to the start of Bond.
Yes.
And you know, you come around, you get Moneypenny back, you get this new Q back, who I'm really excited about. I think he's going to be phenomenal. You know, you get the more traditional M back in there, and I thought Judy Dench was fantastic.
She was,
as
but
M. But you get the more Bernard Lee, kind of that style M back in there.
And the whole thing about it, too, is that in the movie Skyfall, if you haven't seen it, go out and get it if you're a Bond fan. But in the whole thing is that there's a point there where you see Bond go away.
Yeah.
To everybody that's within knowledge, they think Bond is dead.
Yep.
They think
top of the movie.
They think he's no longer in existence. They think he has passed away. He comes back. And so take from that top of the movie, and everything kind of goes from there. They essentially clean house and go, okay, here's how we're going to do this again. We're going to start everything over. And it's not only that, which I thought was the most amazing thing, because I'm going, oh my goodness, they're starting it all over. Like, it got me excited because they're just cleaning house and getting people back into the plots
and they've
the,
got,
the characters
and they've got,
that they need to.
They've got younger people in there, like, you know, old Desmond Ewan, who was Q for so many years. You know, like I said, Bernard Lee was M for a ton of years. Miss Moneypenny, I'm just going to forget her name. What? Ah.
That's okay.
She played Moneypenny for a ton of years.
But even, you know, all of that said, they take all these characters and they go, okay, we need to reset. It's essentially they pushed reset on a series, and they did it with Craig as the centerpiece.
Lois Maxwell.
Not only that, Moneypenny, but the entire movie is great. The villain is just
Javier Bardem was great.
One of the darkest villains that they've had in the Bond series. He's not one of these guys where you're like, huh, that's kind of funny. Bond will get him. They've continuously gotten
darker.
Yeah,
like a media mogul.
Yeah.
Like in,
they've continuously gotten darker as the series has gone on, but this guy was evil. And you felt very scared of this guy. And so the whole Skyfall in its entirety was just great.
Yeah.
You talk to
Get the old car in there. Yep. You get Albert Finney in
And towards the end where they kind of go back to Bond's history and where he came from, and all, it's just
great.
Like it's
great,
the
great.
Whole thing. It's just
so we're big Skyfall guys.
Yes.
Quantum of Solace I wish never existed.
Oh gosh.
That was awful. The number three, again, I grew up on Roger Moore. I got to go Man with the Golden Gun, which was his second one.
And that's great. I like that
Francisco
one a lot.
Francisco Scarabanga, Dude with the Third Nipple.
Scarabanga.
I thought that was fantastic. Although, I think the Bond girl in that movie was dreadful, if that's
she
the
was,
one I'm
no,
thinking of.
Yeah,
she
you're
was,
right, but she was bad.
Bad. But
that's a good one.
I think I have to go Man with the Golden Gun.
Well, as far as Pierce Brosnan is concerned, and I do like... You know, I did like them. They weren't the best, but I did like them. But to me, because I grew up on all of it,
GoldenEye is
third. And
the only thing with GoldenEye that I struggle a little bit with is I think the video game was better than the movie.
The video game is probably more popular than the movie, which is probably not saying good things about the movie GoldenEye. But when you watch GoldenEye, a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
And if you could tie it into the movie... Or tied into the video game, I should say, you find out that a lot of things in the video game that you're doing are, oh my goodness, this actually happened in the movie, or this, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the video game, for me personally, has a lot to do with it, because that was one of my cousins had the video game, and I would spend nights over at his place playing the game, and it was wildly entertaining, and the movie really didn't disappoint. So that's my top three when it comes to Bond.
Okay.
That's his top three. The next question we had was villain and or... Bond girl, and why don't we just pick our favorite with both? Because
we have to.
You have to.
We have to. My favorite Bond girl has got to be Jane Seymour in Live and Let Die. I thought as Miss Solitaire, I thought she was phenomenal.
Okay.
Roger Moore's first movie. I just thought that movie was really well done, and I thought Jane Seymour was fantastic. I got to go. I got to go Miss Solitaire. Jane Seymour.
That's good. It's one of those things where when you look through the movies, it's really hard to figure out who was who because there are so many girls going on. The other thing, too, about them, you have to remember is the names of a lot of these.
There has to be a shout out to Honey Rider, of course, the original Ursula Andress.
Yes. To me, it's really tough because they kind of go... They all get really muddled together, but I'm really bad with names, but the one he was supposed to marry. Was it from Russia with Love? Because he's supposed to be married.
He actually got married in On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I know the plot. They're on the mountain and they're skiing and they get caught in the barn. And I want to say that's... From Russia with Love, and I want to say that's Tatiana Romanova, because I know that's the one. I'm pretty sure that's the one I'm thinking of. I know it's Tatiana. I don't know if that's the plot correctly. And again, these seem to all kind of mesh together, but Tatiana to me is the one.
Yeah, that was from Russia with Love. Yeah,
and if I'd have to go back and check it out again.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a couple. Maude Adams deserves a shout out because she was a Bond girl in two different movies. She played Octopussy and then was in one of the other movies right before that. So not a lot of people got into two, but
And I don't think I have the story right.
You need to go back and do some research. Like I said, I know he got married in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. That was the one that he got married in. I think he came close
was
a couple
it
other
more,
times. He came close in Casino Royale.
Was it Moore or Connery that got married?
It was Lazenby.
It was Lazenby.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, again, there's so many of them. I'm looking at them here. There's at least 50, I want to say.
There's a lot.
So it becomes really muddled
Denise
together.
Denise Richards playing a nuclear scientist?
Yeah, that was really far-fetched. So that, to me, is just not... I do a lot better with the Bond villains, so we'll move on to there.
Okay.
Bond,
to me.
Bond villains, you got to go. Odd Job, of course, is a guy that I really liked. looking at some of them here. Goldfinger,
yeah,
one of my top favorites. The guy with the Jaws, was it Jaws? Was
Jaws.
That his name? Jaws?
Yeah, Richard Kiel, yeah.
Yep.
In Moonrakers, great.
Yep, that was great. The two dudes that... essentially they were in love with each other.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever, guys. Those two were really good. But for me, it was Jaws.
It was Jaws?
Yes.
Very iconic. Yeah. You can't make a case against Jaws. He was just hilarious. He was phenomenal. I would probably go and some of it, he was good. And just because he was in so many movies, Blofeld was so good. I mean, he was in six different movies.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite, I really enjoyed him. I think Diamonds Are Forever was probably my favorite one that he was in. But he was the character was brilliant. I just enjoyed how many different areas that he's in. Also, Alec Trevelyan, I thought was great in GoldenEye as 006, but Sean Bean plays a phenomenal villain. He's done that in a number of ones. Even Christopher Walken in a movie that wasn't for Your Eyes Only wasn't great, but it was A View to a Kill. Wasn't great, but Christopher Walken, of course, because he's been in everything. But.
Yes. Yeah, that's true too. But either that or Odd Job, Goldfinger.
Odd Job, Jaws. Okay, and I'm gonna take Blofeld. We're gonna go hit the way back. I'm gonna go Blofeld.
Okay, so those are our Bond kind of things, and probably just one more time for
Bond, James Bond.
We could probably do, like you said, a whole podcast on James Bond.
Gunderson, this podcast lives to die another day.
Oh my goodness, one more time
Bond.
For
Bond, James Bond.
So. I'm glad you could sit through all of that. We had to do it. It was the 007 podcast.
It was.
It had to be done. We had to talk about it. James Bond and all his glory. So, again, thank you for sitting through this. Next week as we preview what's coming up.
And if you have thoughts on James Bond,
oh yeah,
email,
absolutely.
Twitter. I mean, get
Pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com, at PintoKFGO. He's
at the Bison Guy.
Come at us with some comments on Facebook, on Twitter, email, whatever. We really would appreciate it. I think next week what I'm going to try to do, get a beat writer down from Manhattan, Kansas. We're only about 2 weeks away. We're under
Less
the 14 days.
Yeah.
We're under the 14-day mark. So when we get together next Sunday, it'll be August 25th. This podcast comes out on the 26th of August, or the next week's will. We're going to be talking Kansas State, NDSU, probably a lot of it, and a lot of our time is going to be taken up with NDSU football and Vikings football. We'll give you some NFC stuff next week as well. And we'll go from there. I'm probably going to cry a little bit because Brad didn't include me in his fantasy football league, which I know his brother's in right now. I can guarantee.
He's not.
Oh, he's not?
He's not. But really, you should just thank me for saving you $25 because you would just be a donation.
Oh.
That's right.
You think I'm that bad?
Yes.
I would get Adrian Foster on my team.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would.
And just dominate. So, for Brad Jones, I'm Dale Gutterson. Thank you so much for joining the Pinto and the White Shadow Show podcast on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your night, day, whatever. Have a good one, folks.